Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast,
bringing you the latest from the world of sports, DFS, and gambling. With over 5 years of hot takes and millions of downloads later, I guess he's been doing something right. Now, sit back and listen to one of the sharpest minds in the game. Here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Good morning. Happy New Year, folks. It is Sunday and it is 2023. I mean, it is a good day for some football. Let's get right into it with another NFL slate. We got week 17. We have games with some implications and other games with not so much going on, which is part of the game theory we got to kind of sort through with this NFL slate today. But we're going to start things off with Atlanta and Arizona. I mean, basically, we got two teams completely out of it. Desmond Ridder still starting for the Falcons. Arizona, basically, Colt McCoy didn't make it through protocols for concussion, so he's out. David Blaus taking under center because Trace McSorley got to start last week. Trace McSorley reminded people why he's Trace McSorley and should not be starting NFL games. Cardinals, basically, no DeAndre Hopkins, which is going to create the scenario that we're talking about from a game theory. You got a team that doesn't have anything to play for. You got James Conner with a terrible defense in Atlanta that isn't great on the ground, isn't great, even worse with their secondary. Marquise Brown and Greg Dortch make a ton of sense. Now, the question is, do you trust David Blau? And the answer should be, F no. But, if you think about it, and you think about it, realistically, Blau is still 4K. You know, let's just be honest here. He's 4K. You know, you get a quarterback this cheap, you have to consider it. You have to consider it. He's 4K. I know it's something where it's like you don't necessarily need the salary, but this is a spot where if he actually can just deliver the ball underneath and you just get dump-off passes to Connor or Dortch or Marquise Brown, hey, even Trey McBride to, potentially in play here. You have a 4K quarterback against a terrible secondary with a team that has nothing to play for. No one on this team is going to be technically really in line outside of Marquise Brown. So everyone's playing for performance bonus contracts or playing for their next roster spot. David Blau's playing to stay in the NFL because I thought he was done in the NFL after the Lions did. And he still gets another chance. So, to me, this is a game you have to consider from a DFS standpoint. From a betting perspective, I mean, what do we say here? Atlanta's favored by 6, and I want to be clear here. Atlanta has Desmond Ridder under center. Why are we favoring Atlanta by 6 again? I'm very curious about this one. To me, this is one of those weird spots where I'm okay with taking the Arizona side here. And I'm okay with throwing the teaser them into a teaser situation. Why are we taking Atlanta? Exactly. Realistically, it's like I could live with this when this line was at 3.5. Fine. Yes, I know DeAndre Hopkins is a great receiver. You don't need a great receiver against Atlanta secondary. Like, to me, Desmond Ridder hasn't shown he can really do much under center. Atlanta's going to run the ball. Drake London has gotten a little bit more run lately in the passing game. But this Falcons team isn't exactly good. Like, they kind of fell off in the second half of the year, as expected. Like, you know, once things started spiraling away from them, that's why they benched Mariota. They're trying to sort things out for next year. But from a DFS standpoint, Drake London's in play at 4,900. But you've got Greg Dortch at 3K. You got Marquise Brown at 5,800. And you got Trey McBride at 3,200. All these guys are in play. They may not be the main team. I can assure you, I'm not playing David Blau on my main team. But for 150 entries, like between DraftKings and FanDuel, they're too cheap. They're too cheap not to play. Because if they do anything, and it's a 41 total, is it possible that it goes over? Yeah. And chances are the team that takes it over is the Arizona side, not the Atlanta side. Atlanta's going to try to run out the clock. Arizona's the team that's going to air it out. I think between James Conner with the workflow he's going to get in the ground game and catching dump offs, Conner makes probably the best play at running back today. Out of all the running backs, because you got Saquon against a tanking Colts team, you got Christian McCaffrey against a Raiders team that is flat out thrown in the towel because Derek Carr got benched. Not that Derek Carr was setting the world on fire, but the fact that Jarrett Stidham is the quarterback today, oh boy, we got some fades today. Give me the Arizona side for DFS. I can run it back with Drake London or not do a run back. Realistically, I don't think you have to run this game back. Tyler Algier, you know Arizona struggles against running backs. I'm okay with Algier because he's 5,300. You don't need that much to get there, and you know Atlanta likes to pound the rock. I'm good with that, but yeah, you give me Dortch and Marquise Brown. I don't even have to play Blau at 4K because I have other plays that I can get to that that won't need to have 200 yards. Because really, realistically, with Blau, you're looking to get to 14 to 16 points, which is very doable. In it, the biggest detriment to Blau is the fact that James Conner could have two rushing touchdowns today, and just undercut Blau's ability to throw for a touchdown today. I think Conner is pretty much a smash spot at running back. Could you get to other plays at running back? Certainly, but there are ways of doing damage on the ground and in the air against Atlanta. Like, give me the Cardinals pieces, which is something that I don't think I have said all year, but Atlanta is in such disarray, and you have these Cardinals pieces at so cheap that realistically, if they start going off, it's going to be really hard to catch some of those teams because of the amount of studs you can fit in from a price tag standpoint on both DraftKings and FanDuel. I'll just leave it at that. Next up, Tampa Bay and Carolina. Tampa Bay, 3.5-point favorites. We got a 40 total. Man, Carolina wants to run the ball. I'm trying to get the news, and we don't have news yet this morning on Vita Vea if he's actually going to be able to play or not. Tampa's been struggling with the run game with Vea out. If Vea's in, I don't think this is going to go Carolina's way. I know Carolina's been playing well lately under Steve Wilks, thus showing that how bad Matt Rhule was, that, you know, he couldn't get this team to look remotely passable. Like, Carolina's traded McCaffrey and basically anyone of value outside of DJ Moore, and they've played better than they have in 2+ years. Should tell you something about how bad Matt Rhule was as an NFL head coach. But with that being said, this is Tom Brady. Late in the year, needs a win and lock down the playoffs. This is the division on the line here, basically. I just don't see Brady effing this up. I think Brady and the Bucs get it done. It may not look pretty, which is why I'm not remotely interested in this game from a DFS standpoint or from a betting standpoint. I have a tough time seeing Tampa losing this game. I'm not betting it outright. If anything, this might be one of those games where you throw it into a teaser, because I don't see Carolina winning this game by more than one score. Carolina could win this game, certainly, but I don't see how Carolina wins this by blowing out Tampa. I really don't. Yeah, they could run the ball, but Tampa's run defense is a lot better than Detroit's. And yes, they smashed Detroit, but we know Detroit has a bad rush defense. This is just one of those things where I think matchup-wise, this is not necessarily the matchup Carolina's looking for. From a DFS standpoint, not really interested in any of the pieces here. Like, DJ Moore, you know, as I said, Carolina's been focusing on the run game way more. But from a rushing standpoint, who's going to get the rise? You got Dante Foreman, you got Chuba Hubbard, you got Ramon Blackshear. And, you know, I didn't see it last week. They proved me wrong. They were, I thought Detroit was going to get up ahead of them enough that they weren't going to be able to get into the run game. Prove me wrong. They just stuck with the run game and just smashed Detroit with it. And we go on from there. So I just don't see them being able to do that to Tampa. We'll see how it goes. Next up, Chicago at Detroit. All right, we got, we got to know the script now. It's when we can get Jared Goff at home versus on the road. The home-road splits are so drastic with Jared Goff that basically he is over 75 yards in the plus at home versus the road, and the completions are up over 10 points. Like, everything is significantly better when he gets to play in the dome. And you have Chicago with two starting corners on IR, a terrible run defense to go with it, so that throws in DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams. And on the Chicago side, you know Detroit sucks against the run. But the one reason why I could say that I don't really enjoy the prospect of playing David Montgomery, Khalil Herbert's back for the Bears. And Justin Fields is still healthy. So between Fields scrambling and the fact that Khalil Herbert's back, he's going to get some carries too. I don't see David Montgomery getting there unless he gets a couple of rushing touchdowns. I don't think he gets enough carries, even if Detroit struggles against the run yet again, which would not be a surprise at all. I don't think David Montgomery gets enough carries to be relevant in this matchup. And the problem is that with Montgomery, he's $6,900. You're paying up for David Montgomery when you could simply just take James Conner at $7,200. Like, that's the problem. You got James Conner at $7,200. You got Aaron Jones at $7,100. And Dalvin Cook at $7,000. All of which I think are better spots than Montgomery, because of the fact that you know Justin Fields is going to scramble. And as I said, Khalil Herbert was still getting 30% of snap share on the regular. And while it's not an A.J. Dillon situation where you don't know what the Packers are going to do week to week, the Bears situation was convoluted enough between those three guys that I am way under on the Chicago side in the run game department. I think you just take Fields and you run them naked, because I'm not paying. Cole Kmet at the tight end spot, yeah, you could pay $4,500, but man, Evan Ingram's a way better play, in my opinion, against the Texans defense than taking Cole Kmet versus the Lions defense, in my opinion. I'm not saying you can't play Cole Kmet with Justin Fields. I'm just saying there's way more ways for Cole Kmet to fail today not the least of which is you got all these other rushing options that Fields may not throw that much. Like, Fields may only throw for about 180 yards today. Even if you look at his throwing props, it's not exactly that big of a prop, because it, I'm looking at it again. Yeah, Justin Fields' throwing props is at 175. Like, that's fair. You know what the rushing props are? Like, it, like in terms of rushing yards, you've got Justin Fields at 76 yards expected rushing. David Montgomery's only at 59.5 for the prop. Like, the lines are telling you that from Vegas, they think it's just going to be Justin Fields scrambling against this Lions defense, which is what happened in the first matchup. That's why David Montgomery didn't get there, even though everyone said it's a great rushing matchup for Chicago. Yeah, for rushing matchup for Justin Fields. I think he's going to scramble a bit. I don't think David Montgomery gets enough carries to get there. On the Lions side, yeah, we got Jared Goff at home. We play Amon-Ra St. Brown. We can play DJ Shark. I have no problems with that. I have no problems with Josh Reynolds as a tournament, deep tournament play. And guess what? Shane Zylstra came up out of nowhere. And best of all, they shifted him to tight end this week. So he's not even at listed as wide receiver. He's listed as tight end. You can play him in the tight end spot if you want to get a little bit different from the rest of the field. So that's more of a 150 type play for Zylstra if you want to chase the production that he got last week. But it's not the craziest thing, given the fact that clearly Goff is looking for him in the red zone. He got three touchdowns last week. He likes what he's seeing out of the guy in the red zone. He trusts him. So I don't think it's crazy to even consider Zylstra in large field GPPs. You know, it's a worthy punt play, in my opinion, to take some shots there for a red zone touchdown. Moving on, because, you know, from my perspective, in that matchup, you got a 52 total and Lions at 5.5. I think the Lions cover, and I think Justin Fields keeps it interesting enough that we go over in that game as well. So, love it for DFS perspective in large field GPPs, so you can customize Justin Fields, or you run GPP for Jared Goff or Justin Fields. With Justin Fields, I'm more comfortable running him naked and doing a couple of runbacks with Lions players, just expecting the back and forth game, than having to pick and choose which guy Justin Fields is going to throw to, because it could be Dante Pettis. Chase Claypool may be back. We're still not sure yet. But, you know, I think Fields is perfectly fine on his own, run naked, and use the rushing props to support the price tag that he has at 7,900. I don't think he's overly expensive given the game environment he's in. Next up, Washington, Cleveland. At Washington, the Deshaun Watson experiment is still suffering quite a bit, but we got Carson Wentz under center, so that actually puts the Browns defense in play, because you never know with Carson Wentz what he's going to do under center. He could easily throw a couple of picks, would not shock me in the slightest. He looked sharp last week when he came back in for Taylor Heinicke and had some good throws, but, you know, I do question long-term what the game plan is with Carson Wentz. I think Washington is just trying to figure out who's got the hot hand to try to get into the postseason. They need to win out, and so this is what they're doing. Heinicke, you know, gave him a little bit of a spell, but he was very careless with the football the last couple of weeks, and that's why Carson Wentz is back in under center, and he gets his last shot at securing a starting gig for next year, because if this Washington thing doesn't work out for Carson Wentz, I'm not sure where he starts at quarterback next year, truth be told. So, in that regard, I do think Terry McLaurin's in play. I think Curtis Samuel's in play. But Jahan Dotson is actually more expensive than Curtis Samuel now. Jahan Dotson's at 4,600. Curtis Samuel's 4,400. Wentz had more rapport with Curtis Samuel than Dotson earlier in the year before he got injured. So it's something to consider. But in multi-entry field, like, I got no problem stacking Washington. On the flip side, the Cleveland side, I want no interest because Chase Young is back. And guess what? Chase Young is healthy. I was worried about San Fran's running the ball effectively at Christian McCaffrey's price tag last week because we didn't know if Chase Young was going to be cleared to go for that game or not. And it came after lock, and, you know, I kind of was stuck in that three-gamer without being able to having a chance to pivot the way I would have wanted to. But with Young back, like, Washington's back to being an excellent run-stopping defense, in my opinion. I don't like Nick Chubb this week. I think it's a bad matchup. I don't trust Deshaun Watson under center. To me, this is not worth trying to gamble, figuring out what Cleveland can do offensively. I'm just fading the Cleveland side entirely, and I think Washington figures out a way to get the W, even with Carson Wentz screwing up a couple of times. You can consider the Cleveland defense, but it's not as though they're cheap either, so because they know it's Wentz. So pricing-wise, they're not that cheap. But, yeah, I'll definitely have exposure to Washington just because with Wentz, you know he's going to air it out. It's a matter of, is he going to get picked off or not when he airs it out? So definitely like the exposure there. Brian Robinson is cheap. No Antonio Gibson this week for Washington, so he's going to get the majority of the workflow. 5,200 and pass catching because of the injury to Gibson. Gibson was receiving the ball as well. So without Gibson, Robinson should be getting the pass catching work in addition to the rushing yards. I like Robinson quite a bit from a salary saving perspective, and we kind of can get a little bit creative with the roster builds up from a DFS standpoint. All right, moving on. We got Denver, who finally fired Nathaniel Hackett, which was way, 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 way overdue. I don't know what the hell Denver's doing. That firing and the cleaning out of the coaching staff should have happened 8 weeks ago. At least. At least 8 weeks ago. I don't know what. Why are we waiting until the second? Like Denver finally laid down on defense. They got embarrassed on national TV, and basically the ownership group for the Broncos were so pissed off with Hackett that they've just decided to finally fire him. So it's like, you need to get embarrassed on national TV to fire the coach that was tanking your season. It is just so incomprehensible how they let that entire situation get toxic, spiral out of control. And yes, they think Russell Wilson's fixable, is what the entire insider sources are saying, but because you let the Hackett thing fester, it's still only made the Russell Wilson rehabilitation process that much worse because the teammates are already bickering on the sidelines. It's a chaotic mess. And so you got the Chiefs already clinching the division. Do they really need this game? Not necessarily, but they need to lock up overall number one seed in the AFC. So they do need to take care of business here. Chiefs are 12.5 favorites. This game was close enough last go-around that I think that this is just getting a little too cute trying to take the Chiefs side. If anything, I'd be betting the Broncos side, and I just tease it that, you know, do I think the Chiefs win? Yeah, but if I tease it and get this up to 18-plus points, do I think the Chiefs are going to win by 3 touchdowns? That's pretty sizable. Like, that's another beatdown. I got to think that now that Hackett's fired, you know, they're going to, the way they were working this through was the fact that they were annoyed with Hackett and they laid down to get him finally fired. I think that's how the defense looked at it. I think this week the defense actually shows up again and KC has a tougher time putting up points. It's a 45 total. Casey's going to score. The question is, does Denver score to keep up or make it relevant for Kelce to be more involved in KC offense? Or is this just going to be a Jerick McKinnon, Isaiah Pacheco kind of game for the Chiefs and they just grind it out? because I don't think the Broncos are going to be able to run against the Chiefs defense with Latavius Murray. So to me, this feels as though the Broncos still try to figure out the offense. I mean, they finally fire who they needed to fire, but it's so late now that they're not going to be able to put in a new offensive game plan at this point. They're going to keep it basic. So their basic stuff wasn't that great. You got Jerry Jeudy questionable with an ankle, too. Cortland Sutton just got back from injury. I mean, he looked okay, but it's like if Jerry Jeudy sits, I mean, this is just a complete mess. I just look at it, it's like I think the Chiefs win comfortably. It's just that I don't think it's necessarily a 12-point win. This probably feels more closer to a 10-point win, but it's going to be a double-digit lead throughout most of the game, and it, a matter of if Denver can do a backdoor cover. But I just don't like betting this one outright from the Chiefs' perspective on the spread. I think, yeah, you can just bet the Chiefs outright to win. I feel confident with that one, just given the situation with Denver. But in terms of like the over, even that I don't feel great about, because there's a real chance this Denver offense just goes into the complete shell the way it goes through. So to me, not necessarily worth the risk. Moving on. The tanking Colts against my New York Football Giants. Monday Night Football was atrocious. Like, just absolutely atrocious. Nick Foles got put into the game for Matt Ryan, and I couldn't tell what was going to happen. Because I thought the Colts were tanking, but I didn't think they were going to be blatant about it. And, like, Matt Ryan was losing them enough games well enough on his own that you didn't need to make the move to Nick Foles. Nick Foles came into Monday Night Football throwing up lollipops for interceptions. Like, it was so embarrassing. The Chargers should have won that game by 30. The Chargers are so dysfunctional and incompetent. Just incompetent in general. That it was triggering me watching that game, because the Colts are literally trying to tank that game, and the Chargers are committed to, like, try to give the ball right back to the Colts and give them a chance to compete in the game. It was just such a miserable game to watch. Meanwhile, the Giants win and they're in. The Giants, 38.5 total. Nick Foles could not have played any worse Monday night. If that is what Nick Foles is going to offer up when under pressure, like, the Colts are losing the remaining games this year, and it's not going to be close. I got to think that there's going to be some measure of self-respect for the Colts to actually play like an NFL football team. I got it, like, some modicum of self-respect to, like, come on. Like, come on, Nick. Like, no. Yeah, you can lose games without, like, deliberately looking like you're trying to throw away the game. Like, come on. Like, seriously. Because, like, it's not like the Giants were, but the Colts legitimately were trying to throw away that game. Like, I know people don't like hearing that being said about NFL teams trying to tank. They were deliberately tanking that game. Like, there's no nice way of saying it. So, how do we approach this from the Giants' side? Because the Giants don't blow teams out. Like, the Giants usually just play games close because they're not that good either. But, you know, the Giants are going to run with Saquon. Saquon's 8K. Do I think Saquon can have one of those massive explosion games where he runs for 150-plus yards? Yeah, it could happen. It could happen if this Colts defense just decides to mail it in the way that the Broncos did last week. Yeah, there's a world where Saquon is the highest scoring running back on the slate. But I also saw the Chargers have multiple receivers kind of running free, and Justin Herbert just having a miserable game throwing the ball around. Do I think Daniel Jones could have a decent enough game with the short passing game between Richie James and Isaiah Hodgins? I do like James and Hodgins more than Slayton today. To me, this doesn't feel like a deep play game for Darius Slayton. This feels more like use the intermediate passing game and interspeed it with Saquon runs between the tackles. I don't see this Colts team fighting. Like, it feels like everyone understands what the deal is with Jeff Saturday and just trying to tank this season. Like, I haven't seen the competitive fire with the Colts where, you know, I look at them and say, it's like, yeah, they're trying to stick it to management for tanking their year. It seems like that fire is kind of gone. Realistically, if the Chargers weren't so incompetent on Monday night, I swear, the Chargers should have won that game by 30. We're going to get to the Chargers a little bit later on. Just absolutely frustrating. But, yeah, from a Giants perspective, yeah, I could see playing Daniel Jones. He's not that expensive. He's running around $5,700. It's just that I don't love the play. I don't love the play, but I don't have a problem with the play either. My biggest thing is the fact that we could just get a situation where the Colts are just so packing it in that, you know, they just keep trying to run out the clock, and it just becomes Saquon just running it down, their throat, and Saquon gets there, and nobody else on the Giants gets there because it's just too easy to run the ball, and Daboll's not going to air it out if he sees it's way too easy to run the ball. He's just going to stick with what works and just pound Saquon and then give him some blow between Breida and Brightwell and have the running game run it 35 plus times today. If the Colts aren't going to compete, like, the Giants could just run it right down their throats. If the Colts do compete, I do think the Giants have opportunities to use the short passing game, but we'll see what the Colts do. I can't stress enough how pitiful the Colts look Monday night. Like, the Giants at 5.5, the line is that high because of how pitiful the Colts look Monday night. Because even people, like, even Vegas thinks that while the Giants aren't very good, this Colts team isn't competing, that the Giants can win this game by 7 to 10 points, and it shouldn't shock anyone, even though the Giants don't blow teams out. But, like, that's what happens when a team just completely mails it in. Next up, we've got Jacksonville and Houston. Jacksonville only favored by 3 on the road, even though it's Houston. Houston has been playing better lately, but the issue is Jacksonville, I mean, basically, they're 7-8, but this game doesn't matter. The only game that matters for Jacksonville is winning against Tennessee next week. It's a win-and-in scenario for the division between Jacksonville and Tennessee. A Tennessee team that is completely in the tank. They benched Malik Willis for Josh Dobbs, and Josh Dobbs looked better than Malik Willis. Josh Dobbs is going to start next week for Tennessee against Jacksonville. But so technically Jacksonville could still make the wild card. It's just a slim shot of them making the wild card. Winning the division is their best path to getting into the postseason. Jacksonville's 4-1 in their last 5. Here's the thing. If the Texans give Jacksonville trouble, if you're Jacksonville, do you keep playing your starters knowing that the playoff hopes really start next week? To me, I got to think that Doug Peterson's trying to, like, coach him up. It's like, making the playoffs is one thing. Making the playoffs the right way is an entirely different conversation. And I think Doug Peterson knows from his experience you need momentum going into the playoffs. So I think he's going to kind of use this game to play his starters. And if they're up by 2 scores in the third quarter, chances are he may just leave them in the fourth just to make sure they salt this game away in the dome and get ready for next week, because he wants them focused on what they need to be doing. Now, on the flip side, I could see another scenario where if things look a little bit shaky or someone comes up a little bit gimpy early on in the game, maybe he decides to start shutting it down with the other starters to make sure that everyone's healthy for next week. But we won't know that until the game starts. Me personally, you know, we kind of know what we got in Jacksonville. We've got a team that realistically, you know, they're not talented at all. Lovie Smith has been getting the most he can out of this group. They're just not a very good group. And it starts with the quarterback position. Davis Mills back under center. Still bad, but, you know, Brandon Cook's still in play. Chris Moore in play at 4,200. No run game to speak of. Do not play the Houston run game, in my opinion. Travis Etienne on the Jacksonville side at 6,400 is another excellent play at running back, because you can run on this Houston defense all day long. Trevor Lawrence, 6,200. This could be a smash spot for Jacksonville's offense. I love Evan Ingram, and I can't believe I'm saying I love Evan Ingram, but from a fantasy perspective, this matchup against Jacksonville, he has confidence playing with the Jags that he never had with the Giants. He has been smashing lately. Houston does not guard tight ends well. We could get a spot where the Jags just put up a big number on his squad. Christian Kirk, 6K. Zay Jones, 5K. Marvin Jones, 3,600. They could all go off on the Jags today. Wouldn't shock me in the slightest. Wouldn't shock me in the slightest, because Jacksonville is looking for momentum and kind of getting that continue. And given the situation we've got in some of these other games like Miami, New Orleans, Philly, I would rather take my shot with Jacksonville than some of these other spots, because we got some issues to talk about. So speaking of which, let's talk about Miami. You know, the NFL and the NFLPA got a lot of stuff to answer for. I'm not going to get into the Tua situation, because I'm aggravated enough as it is that everyone's trying to claim that they did the right thing by Tua. When if you watch that game against the Packers, something was off. We didn't know if it was an injury or not, if he injured himself physically. No, he just got concussed, and not a single person on the sideline or anyone else could actually spot that he got concussed. This protocol's a joke, but I don't have time to vent on how ridiculous this whole situation is. But we look at this scenario, and between the Dolphins with Teddy Bridgewater, Teddy has not looked good. It's in New England. It's 40.5 total. Mac Jones hasn't looked good. I don't like New England pieces in general. You don't even know if Ramondre is going to get the work, because they've been mixing in other backs. New England needs to win this game. The Dolphins absolutely need to win this game. They can both knock each other out today. I don't see it. I don't see a reason to play this game. To me, this is one of those where New England's favored by 2.5. But from a DFS standpoint, I don't see the need to play the Dolphins today against the New England secondary. I'm not trusting Bridgewater underneath to Jalen Waddle to effectively pass enough. Teddy has not been sharp. And even when Teddy did play earlier this year, Teddy's been getting knocked out of games too. Teddy doesn't... I'm still not even sure if Teddy's healthy, truth be told. Because Teddy got knocked out in concussion protocol, and he was a little nicked up before he got hurt as well in some of these games. I don't know. I just don't have a good feeling about this game. I'm staying away from it in general, and from a DFS perspective. I'll let out, if someone makes it work with Tyreek or Waddle this week, God bless to them, because it's a high leverage spot. If you can make it work, I know some people are going to play Teddy Bridgewater, and I'm not going to listen. There are plenty of Teddy Bridgewater's 5K, and you got Hill at 8,900, which is one of the cheapest prices he's had all year, and Jalen Waddle at 7,500, which is still pretty cheap. Considering what he can do, but there's so many other spots that you can go to. Why, to me, I don't get the need to focus on this game. Moving on, Philly and New Orleans. Philly favored over New Orleans, who basically continue playing Andy Dalton, even though Andy Dalton can't throw. Taysom Hill's in play at tight end. Not quarterback. He's in play at tight end, so he's still in play at on FanDuel. Today, there are too many options at quarterback. Not even considering Taysom at 4,900 against Philly's defense. I think Philly's defense shuts down the Saints. I don't like the Saints offense at all today. Does Philly really need this game? No, but I think it's just one of those games where Gardner Minshew is good enough to get the W here. that Philly just needs to win one to make sure they lock down the bye and the division. I think they just take care of business against New Orleans, but I don't really have a ton of interest in Minshew outside of stacking him with either Devonta Smith or AJ Brown. But I'm going to be limited in that. That's like multiple entries. Like this is like when you're playing 150. Like that's where I would consider these guys. They're not going to be a priority for me today. And New Orleans side, I told you what I felt about Kamara this year. Kamara's been mailing it in for quite some time now. There's no need. So, moving on. You know what? We're going to take a quick break before we head into the afternoon window. So, stick around. I will be right back after the sponsor. So, stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. The Fantasy Throwdown Podcast will be right back after our sponsors pay the bills.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you got your popcorn ready.
All right, so we're back. 4 o'clock window. We got to start with a couple of things here. Josh McDaniels should have been fired. Absolutely should have been fired for that. Yet another debacle against the Steelers. It was a mess. It was an absolute mess. So let's just be frank here. Derek Carr deserved to get benched. Josh McDaniels still deserved to get fired. Like, it is what it is. Like, let's just not mince words here. Dude needs to be gone. But, you know, as it stands, it's just one of those where we don't really see much there in terms of production from the squad, in truth. Like, to me, this is just one of those things where it's Josh Jacobs or Davante Adams, and they are against the worst possible matchup, in my opinion, with the 49ers defense. Because the 49ers are good against the run. I don't think the Raiders' offensive line matches up well against what the Niners want to do at the line of scrimmage. And secondary-wise, Davante Adams is going to have some trouble. And did I mention Jarrett Stidham's the quarterback, who's even worse than Carr? Like, this is just not a good situation for the Raiders. I don't, like, they are kind of tanking the rest of the year, and they sent Carr home just so he didn't get injured, so they could trade him in the offseason. We'll see how that goes. But, like, I don't see any need to play the Raiders at all. There's no need to chase that game. My whole thing is, the Niners defense is only 2,900. You don't even need to play McCaffrey to correlate. You could just play the Niners defense. I don't think there's any reason to be avoiding the Niners defense today. And the Raiders secondary is one of those situations where we can go with Brock Purdy, who not exactly lighting it up, but he's 5,500. You could dump it off to Christian McCaffrey at 9K, or you could run it back with Brandon Ayuk at 6,300. Oh, but guess what? The Raiders are terrible against tight ends, too. Kittle's 5,400. This could be another Kittle smash spot. You link up Purdy with Kittle, and you could still play McCaffrey with the Niners defense. To me, the Raiders are unplayable today. I think the Raiders are unplayable, and you know the 49ers are going to feed the rock to close out games. So, McCaffrey may not get there. You may end up getting some Jordan Mason, but sooner or later, McCaffrey's going to have one of these games where he shows up, and the Raiders' defense is significantly worse than what the Niners were going up against last week against Washington. And people will see the McCaffrey bust last week, say, we're not playing McCaffrey at high price dollar value. And guess what? McCaffrey's going to be low-owned in a way, way, way better spot than he was last week. There are ways to get to Christian McCaffrey today. We got enough value on the slate. You don't even need to play Brock Purdy. You can just play McCaffrey with the Niners defense, and you're fine there. So, to me, that's a route I will certainly be going with today. Niners all day. Niners are 9.5-point favorites. Is it high? Yeah. How are the Raiders moving the ball today? I'm very curious. I'm very curious to see what the Raiders do today, because I think the Niners smash them. I think they absolutely smashed them. Moving on. Mike White is back under center for the Jets as they travel to Seattle. I like the Jets' defense. My only question with the Jets' defense, the Jets in general, is the Jets did not want to clear Mike White's ribs for the longest time. And it's only because Zach Wilson looked so poor under center, and that they had to go to Chris Streveler, and the fact that they don't want to pay Joe Flacco for whatever reason to back up games, mainly because he might be on some type of performance bonus for snap count. Now we're back to Mike White. My only question with Mike White is, how healthy are those ribs? Because I could see a scenario where Mike White starts the game and doesn't finish the game because he takes a bad shot to the ribs from Seattle and gets knocked out. I can very easily see that scenario because the Jets were hesitant and were trying to make the playoffs and insisted on not playing Mike White. And Mike White was trying to find any doctor under the sun to clear him to play, and he couldn't do it. It's got me curious because Mike White is 5,400. Zonovan Knight, 5,100. Garrett Wilson, 5,500. Corey Davis, 3,700. The Jets need to win this game. I don't see Seattle moving the ball against this Jets defense with Sauce Gardner. Geno Smith has regressed. He slowed down. The toll of the season is catching up to him. I think Seattle is a little bit overmatched by the Jets defense. I think the Jets offense will look better under White. I just question how healthy those ribs are. But at a certain point, the Jets have got to commit to, even if Mike White can't start, Flacco got to be playing backup now. At this point, Flacco's the backup. So, to me, even if White gets knocked out, and I'm still going to have shares of White, but I am going to get exposure to Zonovan Knight, Garrett Wilson, and Corey Davis in my player pool for 100-plus entries. I think there are too many spots today where you can just not play some of these dusty teams that are looking to pack it in, and you got a team that wants to get it done. Because people are going to target this Vikings-Packers game. You don't have to jam in the Vikings-Packers in the afternoon window. You can jam the Jets. You can actually jam the Jets today. Seattle, we have seen the data. Seattle is not only the team that is the worst at executing screen passes and executes the fewest screen passes, but they're also the team worst at defending screen passes. I think Zonovan Knight, and even Michael Carter, but I want to play Zonovan Knight. I'll throw in a couple of shares of Michael Carter as a leverage spot, but I think there are so many opportunities to run screen passes against this Seattle team, and that's why I look at Corey Davis, 3,700, Wilson, 5,500. There are ways of shredding this Seattle defense today. Like, the Jets are not nearly enough owned as they probably should be. And yes, I know I raised the concern about Mike White's ribs, but even if White gets knocked out the game, Zach Wilson's not coming in under center. It looks like Zach Wilson's going to be inactive, and it's going to be Flacco as the immediate backup to White. So even then, should still be able to carve up this Seattle defense. I definitely love the Jets in the afternoon-only slates, but in the main slate, I will still definitely be playing the Jets today. And Seattle, I'm fading the hell out of it. It's like, you know, Tyler Lockett might play with a busted hand. He might play with a busted hand. Why am I testing that against the Jets secondary? Like, this seems like a terrible idea to play Seattle today. Maybe they get there, but man, this just seems like it. You could say the Geno Smith revenge spot against the Jets all you want. I don't give a damn about the narrative. Like, this is just a bad matchup for Seattle passing game-wise, because Geno, while he's played well this year, Geno has his limitations. I don't think trying to test this Jets secondary is where his strengths lie. I'm just going to leave it at that. All right, finally, in the afternoon slate, we've got Minnesota and Green Bay. Listen, Green Bay is a 3-point favorite at home. Excuse me? Now, I know Kirk Cousins struggles in primetime games, but did we watch this Green Bay team, like how they beat the Dolphins last week? Tua had to get a concussion for Green Bay to get back in this game and win it. Like, did we not watch the same game last week? The only reason why Green Bay won that game is because Tua had a concussion and no one on the freaking sideline for the Dolphins realized it. Like, Aaron Rodgers was not good last week. They were not sharp. And that was a good matchup against the Miami secondary. And they still couldn't do it. Now, they get the Minnesota secondary, which I don't even like. This should be another good spot for Aaron Rodgers to air the ball out. And he still hasn't gotten there this year. Like we got to start asking some really hard questions. Can Aaron Rodgers get it done anymore? Can we be honest with ourselves here? Aaron Rodgers has not been cracking 20 points, fantasy points, this entire year. We want to take it in this spot? He should get yards against Minnesota, but like, he hasn't been able to finish teams this year. It just hasn't been there. So why are we chasing this game on the Packers side? I get why we chase it on the Minnesota side, because it's a plus matchup for Dalvin Cook. It's a plus matchup for Justin Jefferson. Yeah, we don't really trust Kirk Cousins, but guess what? If his guys are going to be open, he should be able to hit those passes. My question is, why the hell are people trying to play Aaron Rodgers this week? Like, I can get behind the idea of playing Alan Lazard or Christian Watson or Romeo Doubs as a one-off. I don't get the Aaron Rodgers call at all at 6K. I don't get the play. We have so many other options to play in that quarterback. Why are people trying to force in Aaron Rodgers? Like, and I'm seeing the optimizers like bring up Aaron Rodgers. Like, listen, it's not as though like I'm like shaking pom poms for Jared Goff, but like what are we talking about here? Like, why are we talking about Aaron Rodgers this week? Like, this is not like a gimme matchup, but it's like he should get points, but you still have to be able to throw passing touchdowns. And Aaron has not been finishing drives. And when the Packers get in the red zone, they're turning to Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. Yeah, can he throw for a passing touchdown to one of the backs? Yeah, but I'm not necessarily trusting the wide receivers for touchdowns. I'm trusting them to get some volume, but I'm not trusting them for a ceiling game. If I'm paying up, I want Justin Jefferson. If I can fit in a Packer for a run back, so be it. But I'm not forcing the play. And I'm definitely not forcing in Aaron Rodgers to get there. Like, to me, this is nonsense. I don't get it. I do not get this at all. I think, you know, realistically, Minnesota, they don't necessarily have the need to play for this, but they have a chance to get first in the first overall seed in the playoffs. You know, I expect Minnesota to come out to knock the Packers out of the playoffs. Like, people were saying the Packers need to win to, like, make sure they can make the playoffs. Minnesota's playing to knock the Packers out of it. Like, they hate the Packers. Like, this is a big game for Minnesota. Because they're tired of people saying that they can't do it. And guess what? I know the Vikings aren't very good. But I know the Packers have major issues. Like I am not seeing the roses on the Green Bay side. Like, maybe folks were not paying attention to that Christmas game with the Dolphins, but Miami will go and win that game if Tua doesn't get concussed. Like, that's just the long and short of it. Miami was going to win that game. Period. That was not going the Packers' way until they got concussed. Then the entire game flipped off of that, because then you had Tua's three picks, and it kept getting worse. That's, you know, again, I'm tired of talking about that Tua concussion. Like, it bothers me that everyone's saying that they did their job correctly. It's like, no. All right, Justin Jefferson, 9,500. Yeah, expensive. Yeah, but I already talked about all the ways you can save money on this slate. Getting Justin Jefferson is not an issue. If you want to leverage it and play something different by going with Dalvin Cook, 7K, I can get it. If you want to play Hockenson at 5,200, I get it. Like, you could hurt the Packers with the tight end spot too. Totally get it. KJ Osborne, 4,600. I get, like, it's a leverage play. I think it's getting a little too cute. I don't think you need to get to KJ this week, but I get the play. I don't get the Packers play other than doing a one-off. Like, either one of the running backs, or Watson, Lazard, or Dobbs. Like, I think there are other ways of doing it, but I don't think stacking the Packers makes sense. Not this week. No. Sunday Night Football, we've got the Steelers and Ravens. I'll try to record something later. I have not looked at pricing for that slate yet. The Ravens are favored by 2. You know, it doesn't look as though Lamar is going to be clear. So it's another game with no Lamar for the Ravens. It's tough watching the Ravens play without Lamar. It's like just truth be told, like, I don't like betting on Ravens games without Lamar. The Steelers aren't good. The Steelers only won that game because it's the Raiders. The Raiders should have won that game last week. So how am I going to take the Steelers on the road when the Steelers could barely beat the Raiders when they're in Pittsburgh honoring Franco Harris's legacy? And they almost lost to the Raiders. No. We're not doing it. And then Monday night, we got the Bills and Bengals. I'll give my thoughts on that game tomorrow, but I'm looking forward to that one. So we'll definitely be covering that one in further detail. But yeah, that does it for this Sunday slate. Like I said, a lot of ways to go, but we got to start picking on some of these teams that are packing it in. You know, Indy, Atlanta, like, some of these teams, like, we got to start going after. Cleveland, Denver, like, we can't get cute. Don't get cute. It's not worth it. We got enough solid plays today. Today should be a good day. I already laid them out. Let's get after it. Best of luck to everyone. I'll catch you later. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all major outlets.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.